He's involved in a number of businesses.
He's a great role model.
Telling it like it is, giving you both sides of the story. This is Katz at Night.
Great American, a great New Yorker.
Now, here's John Katzimatidis.
TGIF, thank God it's Friday, and it's sunny out there, and I think maybe we'll have a good weekend.
Absolutely.
Well, we're here in the studio on WABC Radio and with Lydia Serrani and Ed Cox. How are you, Ed?
I'm doing well. A nice, wonderful Friday. Sunny, bright.
And it's going to be hopefully a great weekend because we need a great weekend. There's more rain this July than any other July in a long time.
A record here in New York.
Yep.
Yeah?
Yep.
Oh, wow.
And meanwhile, out west, they have no rain.
I know. They need the rain, and we got too much of it.
We just got to set up a pipeline.
Uh-oh. Don't say pipeline. They're going to want to shut it down.
Lydia, who do we have?
Well, we have a guy who always has his finger, the pulse of breaking news. And I just, your investigative skills as a journalist myself, who's been doing this for a long time, no one realizes just how much diligence, how much hard work it takes to do what you do every single day, 24/7. John Solomon is on the line with us. I joke about it, but it's true. You're going to have FOIA on your tombstone. He is the founder of justthenews.com. John Solomon, what you got for us?
Well, a lot of breaking news today. Let's start with culture a little bit. So in the city of Cleveland, the storied baseball team named the Indians will be no more. They're about to change that name and move it to the Guardians after an outcry over people who thought it might be insensitive to Native Americans. And this has become a political football all day. Donald Trump has weighed in, calling the name change a disgrace. A lot of debate all around the country about whether this was a necessary or unnecessary change. And I have a funny feeling that's going to spill into the weekend. I'd be interesting to see tonight when the Cleveland Indians have their game, whether any fans express themselves in the stands with banners or other colorful ways. But everybody's buzzing about that. It's a little bit of a culture moment that kind of speaks volumes about the politics of the country.
How can you beat the drums for the Guardians? I mean,
it's going to be a hard one. I don't know. I'll see what the creative marketing people come up with.
Yeah. Good luck.
I just think, who is trying to change our country? I still don't understand it, and it's horrible. It's just horrible.
Yeah, this was a long pressure campaign. We saw it here in Washington, D.C. with the Redskins, of course, and the Redskins capitulated a year or so ago. The Indians capitulated today, and there is just a small but vocal group of activists that have targeted these team names. Over the last 20 years, they've had a lot of success. I went to Marquette University, and back in those days, we were called the Warriors, and today we're called the Golden Eagles for a similar reason. And so pretty remarkable, successful grassroots campaign to get these name changes, but a lot of people don't agree with them and think that they're losing a very important part of Cleveland's history. So,
Has anybody had the courage to tell these people, drop dead?
Now, Dan Snyder at the Redskins tried for a while, but it didn't work out. Yeah, it's amazing.
Did they sell less tickets? What happened?
Well, they sell less tickets because the team hasn't been good for a long time. So that may be the bigger problem. They have bigger problems than a name change right now, although last year they had a little bit of a rebound, but they've had some lean years here in Washington football. So
what's going to happen with the Black National Anthem?
Yeah.
I mean, I object. I think they should play the Greek national anthem, and I think it's play the Italian national anthem. Mm-hmm. And we could have an hour worth of national anthems and then start the game.
There you go.
Absolutely. Maybe they'll cut the games in half instead.
But then people who are deaf will get offended if there's not signing each and every one of them or something like that.
Yeah.
Somebody's bound to get offended.
It is a remarkable moment in American history, and I know people use the word common sense, and I think we'll be debating a lot about whether we've used common sense a lot over the last few years. Well, history will tell us, I suspect. Speaking of politics, a little bit of church politics today. The Catholic Church, the bishop in Nancy Pelosi's own home district, Catholic bishop, has challenged Speaker Pelosi's claim that she's a devout Catholic. He says she's the epitome of hypocrisy. Very sharp words for a prelate, saying that you can't support abortion
and be a
Catholic.
And be a devout Catholic. The fact that she called herself devout And then in the same sentence says she supports abortion for poor people. Yeah. So only poor people get abortions or something? I mean, it was bizarre.
Ooh, that goes back to eugenics and yes.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Yeah. This is an issue that I think will spill into the 2022 election. And let's not forget last night, a very important moment in the abortion rights debate in America, when the state of Mississippi asked the Supreme Court to invalidate Roe versus Wade. This may be the most interesting abortion case to hit the court in a long time. There's a 6-3, there's a belief there are six conservative justices on the court right now. Some people would debate that, but if the court accepts that case, the opportunity to reevaluate the underpinnings of the Roe v. Wade ruling from the early 1970s is going to be there. So abortion is going to be an issue that plays into the 2022 elections, into the backdrop of the Supreme Court. And I suspect Catholics will be talking a lot about it as one of the more important voting blocks in midterm elections. So expect to hear a lot of that. And then while we're on the moment of culture, there wasn't a very warm opening to the Olympics today. Some protesters in Tokyo were chanting, "Go to hell, Olympics." Not a lot of people happy that this Olympics is being played in an empty stadium and with all of the COVID drama that has surrounded it for really 2 years. Remember, it's already a year delayed, but normally the opening of the Olympics has lots of grandeur and excitement and warmth and world feeling, and today there was a lot of animosity and emptiness in the opening ceremony. Really, really something to see. Most of us in America will get to watch that tonight on television if we so choose.
Is anybody watching it?
We made that our question of the day. Is anybody? Do you want to watch the Olympics?
I have no desire.
Well, our listeners have no desire either. 95% voted and said they will not watch it. And they also commented on social media because they said there's too many politics involved. They think it's become too politicized, and that's why they're not watching it. And that's what's also happening with sports.
Cox, you've been to many Olympics. How do you feel about it?
I agree. They are being politicized in a way and for purposes not having to do with sports. People want to use it. Radical one way or the other. They want to use it for their own purposes.
John, what else is going on in the world?
You know, there's a lot of business in the courts going on today. So a federal court ruled unanimously today. Appeals court ruled that the CDC's eviction moratorium, the CDC telling apartment renters they couldn't evict people who weren't paying their rent, was unlawful, that the federal agency did not have that power under the Constitution, under federal law. This is the second court to come to that conclusion. I wouldn't be surprised if this made it all the way to the Supreme Court, given the fervor that the Democrats and the Biden administration had in trying to keep this eviction rule in place. But the courts have been very active in the last few months on everything from election integrity to COVID policies, and they predominantly ruled in favor of people instead of government institutions and government rules. We've seen it with the churches. Most all of the restrictive restrictions on churches during the COVID pandemic have been overturned as unconstitutional. And now a free market ruling saying you can't, as a health agency, tell businesses they can't evict people who aren't paying just because you don't like the state of the economy. And so very big and important ruling there, and one that will be closely watched on whether it makes its way all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, so much breaking news going on. What do you think about President Biden when he was specifically asked, what do you think about Democrats calling for the defunding of police, and then he started talking about sucking the blood of children? Did you hear about this?
There's a lot of awkward moments this week for the president. And, you know, he's always had those weird moments, and, you know, people call him Creepy Joe. They have all the different names politically. But he every so often has this awkward transition. It's just who he is. It's not surprising to me because we've seen it. I've seen it for 40 years. I can remember once getting on an Amtrak train coming back to New York. He got on to Delaware, and he was striking up a conversation because we were all reporters. And he had a couple of these moments where he go, "Oh, gosh, what was he thinking?" I think that's just who he is. But I do think, listen, the bigger question is some of the claims he made in the town hall this week people are really looking at. He really downplayed inflation, but a lot of people in the economic experts are really worried that this is a long-term inflation, not a short-term inflation. He tried to continue to cast voter ID laws as racist, even as many of the members of his own party are starting to back away from that. James Clyburn, the guy that helped Joe Biden get the nomination last year, saved his nomination when it was in trouble during the primary, said, you know what, I'm not that against voter ID. So while the president continues to double down on some of these Jim Crow language for voter ID, his party is starting to back away from it. I think it's been a pretty rough week for the president, but you know, he had a good day on the stock market. The stock market moved in a very big way, very healthy way, and I'm sure his team is taking some solace in that performance today. We cracked 35,000 on the Dow for the first time.
I was looking at your website, justinnews.com. Former FBI agent Wayne Barnes, from exposing the KGB to analyzing Hunter Biden's signature. Tell us about it.
So I think we talked about this on the show last week. I hired a retired FBI agent to go take a look at that receipt the day the famous Hunter Biden laptop was turned off at the Delaware shop. And in fact, this longtime signature expert, Wayne Barnes, looked at it, spent a month getting all of the signatures he could find of Hunter Biden, from his Social Security to his driver's license and things, and came to the conclusion emphatically, without any doubt in his mind, Hunter Biden is the guy that signed the receipt the day that laptop is signed. As you know, Hunter Biden's done the rope-a-dope, and it's, I don't know if that's my laptop. Maybe it's stolen. Maybe it's Russian disinformation. Well, this really lays it pretty clear that he was the guy that dropped it off. But Wayne Barnes is a treasure. He is more than just a signature expert. For 30 years, he was the guy, and those of us who've watched The Americans on television, the Russian spy guy, he was one of the main Soviet spy detectors, spy hunters in America. And his skill set is remarkable. The story just pays tribute to all the things we learned about him while working at him. A remarkable man and a remarkable career in public service. And a lot of times the FBI gets a dirty name, or they have dropped the ball on a lot of things. But line agents like Wayne Barnes do such great work. And it was fun to tell the larger story of his extraordinary work as a as an American public servant and a great law enforcement officer. And some of the great KGB cases in America were solved by that man.
John Solomon of JustTheNews.com. I wanted to ask you a question. I saw something just now come across the local news here, and they, here in New York City, they're going to make available vaccines for kids in schools in the summer. That's what they're saying. It's going to be offered to them for children under 12. How is this possible when it hasn't been FDA approved? It's only approved for emergency use authorization, and kids aren't, there's no emergency needed for children to get vaccinated. We know they're not vectors of it. We know they survived the virus. They're not even long haulers of it. This is like, I think we're kind of encroaching on some dangerous territory legally.
Well, it could be a sign that the CDC is about to blink and New York City knows about it earlier. But you're right. Technically, they can't administer it to people below the age of 12 until the CDC at least provides emergency authorization. Right now, I think it's only approved for 12 and up, so right, teenagers and up. There have been some, you know, rare but significant known cases of heart inflammation from young people. The belief is that this vaccine, when you get it, your body has a strong immune response, which is what you want because you want to fight the disease. But in young people, our immune systems are more hyperactive. They're more strong, and in some cases, that's led to these rare infections and inflammations in the heart. I think the CDC is trying to work through that with medical professionals. But a lot of people, I think, believe that at some point the Biden administration is going to sign off on that for younger children. We'll wait and see. But an interesting development. New York City is making a lot of news on a lot of different fronts, and that's just the latest example of it.
It's let me tell you, that's going to be a big deal. As a mom myself, my kid's not in New York City schools, but they're already in an uproar over masks. And it sounds like, you know, people are worried the mask mandate will come back. Are you worried about it, John Katsimatidis?
Well, I think there's an attempt to do it back. I heard that the Nevada was trying to do it. I've heard California is trying to do it. What do you hear, John?
L.A. has already done it. And I'll tell you something really interesting in Washington. So, you know, the mask mandate was lifted here a few weeks ago, but in many of the buildings I've gone to in the last couple of days, they've reposted the sign saying no entry without a mask for all entrance. And interestingly, I took a look and I'm trying to figure out what's the difference. Why is that building not have the sign? It's buildings with federal agencies in them that I've noticed a pattern. The ones that have federal agencies
so
in
maybe,
them seem to be putting up the sign.
Maybe a message went out from Washington to do that.
And we've got
meanwhile,
check.
They're letting all the immigrants come in from the border. not being tested for COVID. 20% of them at least is estimated that has COVID. And they're letting them go any place they want in the United States and infect the rest of our citizens. I mean,
there's a couple of outbreaks in Texas they're watching very closely that have been traced to illegal immigrants. And I think, you know, that this is why the American public sometimes distrusts Joe Biden's rhetoric, right? You can't say lockdown in America and then leave an open border with no COVID policy whatsoever. It can't be two systems in America. And I think part of the reason he's struggling with his policy right now is that there is a mixed message and the American people are smart enough to detect it.
Hopefully the American people are not that stupid. I mean, this is actually happening. You're letting through all those people with no COVID test into our cities, into our schools. You're integrating them, and it's making the rest of our American citizens sick. Just horrible.
Well, you're right on the money on that.
John, thank you for calling in this today on Friday. TGIF, thank God it's Friday. And we'll catch up with you again next week.
Sounds great, guys. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Now, we have a great guest also coming up, Larry Kudlow, and he's going to talk to us about inflation, and it's at a 13-year high. Is it temporary? Will it go away? Will we be paying even more at the pump? Larry Kudlow with the answers right after this.
I can answer that question.
Talk Radio 77 WABC.
Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Cats at Night Show. I'm Lydia Serrano here with John Katzmatidis and Ed Cox, and we also have on the line with us a what would you like to Larry Kudlow. There's so many words to describe him: brilliant economy expert, works under the Trump administration. Now he's a Fox News star. He's a WABC star. Welcome, Larry Kudlow,
and a star back in the Reagan administration.
Oh yeah, I mean, could go on and on.
You're all wonderful. Anytime. You're all wonderful.
Well, the market closed at, again, almost an all-time high of 35,000. Is that the true indicator of the economy is going the right direction? Meanwhile, interest rates are fluctuating. They were up. They were going down most of the week. Bitcoins were down below 30,000. They tried to recover a little bit. What say you, Larry Kudlow?
Well, look, Dow 35,000 is a record. That's a record. It's a real milestone. We'll see if it can hold, but that's a very big deal. And fundamentally, you have record profits, and you have almost free money. Interest rates are going to – profits are going to stay high. The economy is in very good shape, I think. I mean, that was really the high point of the week, was Dow 35,000. And by the way, I would own stocks for the long run. I would not own Bitcoin for the long run. The low of the week, though, was when President Biden at the town hall said that more federal spending will get inflation down. And in fact, he repeated that. Inflation will go down. Inflation will go down. He repeated it three times. It's kind of like the Good Witch of the North in The Wizard of Oz when she clicked her heels, her slippers, three times. So magically, unfortunately, more federal spending will not bring down inflation, and the regulatory strings attached to more federal spending will damage the economy if that $3 trillion or $4 trillion or $5 trillion, if that actually goes through. I don't know that it will go through, but people should keep an eye on that. More spending will create higher inflation.
I would love to have an enterprising reporter. I'd love to have an enterprising reporter ask Chairman Powell that question. Do you agree with the president? What do you think he would say, Larry?
Well, I think he would have to say no. It may cost him his job. But
I think he wants to stay 10 more years. I think he's going to say the president is a brilliant person.
Well, dodge the issue.
I'm not sure he'd go that far. I mean, Jay Powell has, you know, said, for example, you know, the Biden administration is obsessive about global warming, with calling it an existential risk, which is wrong. It's utterly wrong, and the facts prove they're wrong. And Powell said a few weeks ago that the Federal Reserve would not be influenced by global warming policies, which I thought was very brave. That may cost him his job. And they're probably going to have to, you know, taper down their bond purchases at some point, because the inflation is a problem, whether it's temporary or not, it's still a problem. But the one thing we know is that more spending and the regulatory strings that go with it and higher taxes will do great damage to the economy. And that's the issue. It's out there, and people have to be sensitive to that, and we'll see how that all plays out. But right now, you know, again, high profits and low interest rates is a very good mix. Lee Cooperman, who is a great friend of mine, he's an investment icon, he said this week that at the current level of interest rates, nothing is overvalued in the stock market. He doesn't like bonds, but he said nothing is overvalued in stocks, and I think he's right. And you're getting booming, booming profits. So all that's good. So it's like, as usual, the Washington story is not good, but the Wall Street story and the economic story is good.
So how can you have low interest rates with inflation going up and up and up? How do you square that circle?
You sound like you're like Biden in reverse. He said it's going to go down and down and down. So you're saying it's going to go up and up and up. We'll have the Wicked Witch of the West click her heels three times for you. By the way, The Wizard of Oz is a fabulous book. It's all about the gold standard and the election of 1896. But I digress. I don't know that inflation is going to go up and up and up. That is going to depend perhaps most of all on the reconciliation bill. But I do think that there's a lot of good things going on right now, and I wouldn't want to obsess just about that. I mean, half of the inflation rise is one-time post-pandemic demand, supply shortages, and commodity bumps. The dollar is holding very well. King dollar is strong. The bond market rates are low. The TIPS break-evens are a tiny bit. They're like 35 basis points higher. So that's a little inflation worry. But basically, the financial markets are looking through the inflation. So the big thing here, I had a guy on tonight, Jason Smith. He's the ranking Republican on the House Budget Committee. And they are doing a very smart thing. They are now looking to return to budget caps and sequestration. The old Graham Rudman bill in the late 80s, and we had this in the Gingrich years. We had a budget deal a few years ago, but the caps were broken. So the idea of another $5 trillion in spending is so bad. I mean, I call it go woke, go broke. And you can't do that. And the debt ceiling is coming due in a few weeks. So they're talking about restoring budget caps and sequestration budget cuts if you break the caps. Now, that's the kind of constructive Republican policies that they should stay with. And they must fight this reconciliation bill. They must fight it, among other. I mean, again, I can think of 5 trillion reasons to beat reconciliation. One of them is amnesty for illegal immigration. They've snuck that in. Now, I'm all for immigration as long as it's legal. I'm completely in favor of immigration and assimilation.
Well, as long as we have checks and balances, too.
But it's got to be legal immigration. So that's another reason to defeat the reconciliation bill.
Now, Larry, let me ask you, energy and bank stocks were a little bit weak this week. Bank stocks, their earnings were not that bad. What do you account for that?
Their earnings were great.
Yep.
Their earnings are great. Banks have more money and they know what to do with. In fact, they're giving some of it back to the Fed. So I would just be long the index. I'd be long the S&P index, and I'd keep holding it. My friends Jim Glassman and Kevin Hassett wrote a book, I don't know, about 15 years ago. Their timing wasn't great, but the title of the book was Dow 36,000. Now, I know it went to 700 first, but now we're at 35,000, and I still think the upward trajectory of the stock market is alive and well. And it's riding, you know, it's cresting on a wave of profits. Businesses are very productive. In fact, productivity is going up.
Well, the other thing that's going on, what's going on with energy, in your opinion?
Look, the stupidest thing I've seen in the energy sector is giving Russia the Nord Stream 2 pipeline and then stopping American companies and stopping the Canadian company from either drilling or building pipelines here. This is utter stupidity. And that policy also has to be stopped, and that will be maybe part of reconciliation, or maybe you're just going to have to vote the Democrats out of Congress next year. The energy story is not good in the U.S. We're only producing 11 million barrels a day. We peaked at over 13 million. We should be the swing producer, and LNG exports should be a tremendous source of business for American energy companies. But the Biden administration has made a huge blunder in caving in to Putin on the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. This is a matter of national security because it gives Putin the keys to Europe and threatens the Ukraine and Georgia and the Baltics and Eastern Europe.
Oh, didn't Putin promise that it wouldn't impact Ukraine, Larry? Come on.
Yeah.
If Trump would have done that, they would have went after him for treason.
Yep.
Well, look, the point is Trump didn't do it. We were successful in stopping Nord Stream 2. I worked very hard on this with Mnuchin and O'Brien and Wilbur Ross and so forth. You know, we put sanctions on all fees, the Swiss company and the insurance companies, and we stopped them. And now Biden's people are saying, well, if Russia uses this as a weapon, they'll sanction them. Well, what are you kidding me? Of course it's a weapon.
It's crazy.
We just gave them the weapon.
Right.
Larry, last question before we have to take a break. Now, one of the major IPOs that was done in the last couple of weeks was Didi, a Chinese company. After they sucked out the American money into that company, the Chinese changed their mind and are trying to destroy that company.
Mm.
How much do you know about that?
Well, I don't know all the details about that, all right? But here's what I know. Americans should really stop investing in Chinese public companies. Now, again, as Trump policies, this is Robert O'Brien and I instituted a policy where the federal thrift savings plan could no longer invest in Chinese military companies. China, number one, cooks the books. They do not meet international accounting standards. Number two, a lot of that money flows into the Red Army, which controls many companies. And number three, the government of China has a call on every single Chinese company with respect to pulling in information and private documentation and ordering them around. In effect, Chinese public companies are instrumentalities of the state of China. And that's why Americans should be very, very wary. And frankly, I would avoid investment in China. These are not real companies. They are state-dominated companies. And it's a wicked state to begin with. So stay away from that. If you want to invest overseas, you know, go to places that are more prominent. Go to Thailand. Go to Vietnam. Go to India. Go to Brazil. You know, right now the international indexes are performing extremely well, along with the S&P 500. Stay away from China. That's my advice.
Thank you very much, and thank you for coming on and telling all the American people how you feel the economy is going. That's great. And, God bless you, and God bless America.
Thank you, John. Take care, everybody.
Thank you. Yep. Ed Cox, do you have any opinion on that? You're a Chinese expert.
Oh, yeah. Look, this is no longer Deng Xiaoping's China, where it's loosening up. The Communist Party was pulling back its control of the markets, and China took off. Xi has now, for 10 years, been tightening the control of the Communist Party over everything, and including the military is coming in more and more to dominate.
But by doing this, by taking the American money and then trashing the stock, Who else is going to invest next time in China? Haven't they thought about that?
No, Xi does not know that. He's like Mao. He is completely China. He does not understand that, and he is a communist right down to his fingertips.
Mm. Okay, let's take a break, and when we come back,
we'll have Frank Carone.
Frank Carone created the success of Eric Adams, I believe. Mm-hmm. And I would like to hear about his vision of under an Eric Adams
administration,
how successful New York City is going to be.
We'll be right back.
John Katz and the TV's 77 WABC.
TGIF, thank God it's Friday. And this is John Katzmatidis along with Lydia Serrani, Ed Cox. And we're trying to bring Friday to a close. And before we close on Friday, we have with us Frank Carone. Frank Carone is a substantial Democratic leader in Brooklyn. And he helped Eric Adams to win the nomination and may be the next mayor. And we'd like to know from Frank Serrone what his vision is for New York. Frank?
Hi, John. Thank you so much. And hi, Lydia. And hello, Ed. Thank you for having me. Hi, guys. And I'm also trying to bring Friday to a close as well.
TGIF. Thank God it's Friday.
Law and order is topic number one when it comes to New York City. Will Eric Adams, obviously a former cop himself, be able to bring back the city from its brink?
Well, thank you, Lydia. It's a great question. And I can tell you, Eric, in my experience dealing with him over many, many years, and I can tell you, he's really understands the need for public safety and the importance of having the communities and citizens and tourists and businesses, and clergy and everyone, and to feel safe. And that's a big part of building the city back and building confidence and helping the economy. He understands all that. So it's certainly first on his mind. And being a police officer, in his experience as a young man, he shared this during the campaign, living through the streets of Brooklyn, as I myself have, and many of us have grew up here in the city, whether it's Brooklyn or other boroughs. We understand the city in our blood, and we understand what it means and the importance of safety. So we got to first start with the question. You identify and embrace the problem and understand the importance of it. So that part, the answer is, I think, clearly yes. I think the voters have, many of those voters from the poor middle-class communities that in vast numbers voted for Eric embraced and understood his message, and we think the answer is yes. How does he do that? Well, that's going to be another challenge, and that's going to, I think, be a combination of factors. Eric is a terrific listener. He's going to listen to the needs of the communities, the commanders, the rank-and-file officer, and he's going to, make sure that they understand that he's supporting them and supporting communities, and it'll be a community police department partnership. So I think the answer to that is going to be a resounding yes.
Yeah, Frank, isn't he really the first mayor of New York who really represents the streets of New York, who came up from the streets of New York in a very real way and understands them?
Well, I think the answer is yes. And the first African-American, what we call blue-collar mayor as well. Although beloved David Dinkins was an attorney, and I'm an attorney myself, so no knock on attorneys, but he's Eric, yes. He comes from the streets. He comes from the inner city. He worked his way up through the police department, through the legislature, through the borough president. So, yeah, Eric is in a unique position.
Yeah, I was very impressed with a comment that he made in his victory speech when he said, "It's not social media that counts, it's Social Security that counts." And, of course, people around them laughed. They got it. They got it.
Eric is great at taking an important issue that we're all feeling and getting maybe frustrated by, and then articulating the essence of it quickly. He's really good at that. Yeah, I enjoyed that comment as well.
And I know he's been reaching out all over the city to all the think tanks. I mean, we know, how do we solve the problems of this city? And from the streets up, it's very impressive.
Well, one of the things that many people are starting to learn about Eric, but someone who knows him for a long time, knew for quite a while, Eric has an incredible energy. His work ethic is second to none. He goes to late at night, wakes up very, very early. And for many, many, many months, he was preparing himself, speaking to, those people that he felt he could learn from. It didn't matter if they were, more experienced than him, less experienced than him. He has an appetite and a voracious appetite to learn. And he's a terrific listener and very empathetic. And I watched him and was very, very impressed the way that he spends the time listening to people who are experienced, doesn't have to always agree or disagree, but he enjoys learning. And then he formed his own opinion based on the facts and, you know, what he's learned from folks who've been there before him.
Yep. Now, all across the political spectrum. Very impressive.
And he likes to ride bicycles. He likes to ride his bike, and he gets up early. He's a very fit guy. He's like a true New Yorker, you know? He's like one of us.
And I got to tell you, his dieting was – that was amazing. I remember
well,
that. That was
– when I've gone to dinner with him, and I've gone to dinner with him twice, and he's a vegetarian. He eats a lot of vegetables, and the one time I did see him eat fish. So he's a very healthy
guy. It's really interesting, John. You're right. I said to him the other day – because, you know, we're all suffering from struggling with putting on pounds, and particularly when you're working, you know, so often and meeting folks, and whether it's restaurants, breakfast, lunches, dinners, whatever. And I said, you know, when do we make time to, you know, exercise a little bit, or at least try to stay in shape? He said, you know, you need to kind of sort of embrace the activity, meaning if you're in your office, you know, walk a few flights of stairs, walk through the office, walk up the street. You have to try to – you must take care of your health. You must be conscious of it. And he's right. And, you know, I don't know if many people know this, but Eric was diagnosed with being legally blind from diabetes. And he, rather than succumb to the vast, you know, medicinal prescriptions of the doctors, and he said
he
started reading. He read. He taught himself. He actually shared some of the books with me back then. And he was very, very disciplined in his diet. And as you can see, he cured himself of that issue with his eyes. He cured himself of the diabetes. He's healthy. He's fit. And it's that same discipline he used to tackle that problem he uses to tackle other problems.
And he did a good job as borough president. Brooklyn has prospered in the last 8 years. And it's got, you know, I spent a lot of money in Brooklyn. And Brooklyn is prospering. Manhattan is a vast desert right now.
You know. Listen, we're obviously one city and we're one family. But you know, I was born in Brooklyn. My parents were born in Brooklyn. My grandparents were born in Brooklyn. They fought in the Second World War while living in Brooklyn, leaving Brooklyn. So yeah, it's an important epicenter of the city for sure. But Eric's really, really made sure to reach out to the Bronx, to Queens, to Staten Island, and of course to New York City, the capital of the world, and many people's opinion, including my own. So I was happy to see that, and he understands he needs support from the entire city to be successful.
Well, Frank Carone, thank you so much for calling in, and we'll be talking to you again real soon to keep us up to date on the doings of possibly the next mayor, Eric Adams. And thank you for everything you do for Brooklyn and in our city. God bless.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And let's take a break, and when we come back, I understand we have the Commissioner Bill Bratton.
WABC. Nothing is more important than your vote. Now, Newsmax's Sean Spicer and Lindsay Keith are exposing the flaws in our voting systems and how to fix them. Watch Spicer and Company on Newsmax tonight for the real truth about your vote. Newsmax is on all major cable systems. Check your guide. Or watch Newsmax on most streaming systems or your smart TV. And download the free Newsmax app on your phone and start watching now. Newsmax is your trusted news source. Tune in today.
For your new Mazda, shop Ramsey Mazda. During the Season of Discovery sales event, Mazda has been named the best car brand by U.S. News & World Report. Visit RamseyMazda.com or stop in for a test drive. Choose wisely. Choose Ramsey Mazda.
We all hear the radio ads about the IRS. They tell you to be afraid, to be scared, and they try to frighten you into calling. I'm not here to do that. Tax Relief Advocates is different. TRA is here to tell you that if you owe money to the IRS, whether it's $5,000, $50,000, or $500,000, we have a solution. It doesn't matter if you're sitting in your car, at work, or with your kids, no matter where you are, call now. 800-575-1482. Don't lose hope. TRA can eliminate or reduce what you owe to the IRS. There is zero risk to you. If we can't reduce your tax debt, then you pay nothing. Our passion is taxes and helping individuals fix their IRS problems. We have a 5-star rating on Google and Yelp and an A+ with the Better Business Bureau. You don't need to be afraid of the IRS any longer. End your tax nightmare today by visiting us online at TRA.com or call 800-575-1482. That's 800-575-1482. Tax Relief Advocates. Real solutions for real people.
Finally, an ED treatment that will blow your partner away. A local men's clinic, Boston Medical Group, is offering a free dose of their proven ED treatment with a paid consultation. Now, this treatment works instantly and can be taken at home with 98% effectiveness, regardless of your age or your medical condition. You'll receive a personalized custom blend of FDA-approved medications specifically formulated to treat sexual performance issues caused by diabetes, cardiovascular problems, low testosterone, or just stress. For over 20 years, Boston Medical Group has helped men regain their performance with just one office visit. This is a limited time offer. You must act now to reserve your free dose. Call Boston Medical Group at 800-936-4300. That's 800-936-4300. 800-936-4300. Or visit bostonmedicalgroup.com. Your free dose is offered during your private and confidential office visit.
Welcome back to the John Katzmatidis Cats at Night Show. I'm Lydia Serrano here with John Katzmatidis and Ed Cox. And on the line with us, we have former police commissioner Bill Bratton. And I was looking at one of your tweets, Commissioner, and you talk about broken windows. And you say the challenge is to fix the broken windows constitutionally, compassionately, and consistently. And I thought that was beautifully put, because we need to get our city back. Because it's almost looks like it's going backwards.
It is going backwards at a rapid rate, particularly around the issue of quality of life crime, and certainly, as you know, shootings and murders. And one of the reasons is the continuing attacks by the far left legislature and our city council on broken windows. The idea of the little things that drive people crazy in the neighborhood, the prostitution, the gang on the corner, the graffiti, all the things that create a degree of fear. And broken windows, at its heart, is community policing, as I talked about in that tweet, that it's what people want the police to prioritize to work to fix. So I thank you for bringing that up. It's certainly, I've been an advocate of broken windows with George Kelling for 25, 30 years, and it's what's made New York safe in the first place back in the 90s and for most of the 21st century, so the legislature got into the act and screwed it all up.
Now, if Eric Adams is the next mayor of the city of New York, your confidence level that he'll make sure that the criminals are handcuffed versus the police?
Well, the good news is we have two candidates for the mayoralty who are both focused on the issue of crime. Clearly, Eric, the Democrat, has the best chance at the Democratic city. I worked with Eric for the last 30 years in the sense of I'll work with him over the last 30 years. He was a lieutenant in the transit police when I was chief of transit back in the 90s, captain when I was the commissioner of the NYPD, 94 to 96. So he gets it. He gets the importance of quality of life. He gets the importance of serious crime. And he gets the importance of punishing criminals, something that the legislature in Albany certainly has given up on. The idea is basically punish the victims more so than the people that are victimizing them.
Understood. So you're highly confident that our city is going to make a turnaround, because I've said to everybody there's three issues in our city for November. One is crime, two is crime, three is crime.
So, well, I'd add to that, John, crime and disorder, because it's the disorder that's in the city. The last couple of days, had to take a trip down to Washington for a board meeting, but stayed in the city. And the behavior in the streets is incredible. The defecation, the urination, the constant harassing of people on the streets, the screwballs riding around on those dirt bikes. When did we stop enforcing traffic laws and requiring people to have plates on their motorcycles? And the chaos in the streets is getting worse and worse. And Senator Moynihan back in the 70s was, in a very famous speech, talked about the issues of that era of defining social deviancy down. By that he meant we were beginning to excuse away norms of behavior at that time. Well, certainly in this era, we are defining norms of decency down. We are excusing or allowing to occur and tolerating so many abnormalities on our streets, and it's making the streets less safe and driving people crazy. And when people get back to their offices in September, they're going to find a very different Manhattan than when they left a year and a half ago. And when the tourists come back, if they come back, it'll be interesting to see how long they stay, because what they're expecting is a form of Disneyland, and what they're going to find is basically going to be Adventureland.
So, if they don't clean up Times Square and the theater district by September, the tourists are going to be very upset. And I don't know how many tourists are be coming into Europe. I told all my friends, don't you dare go to Europe. And Ed Cox, how do you feel about that?
Well, look, you know, not just that, but Commissioner, I'd like to ask you, how are we going to get people back in our subways? You started leading the cops in the subways. How do we make sure that they're safe for everybody so it gets used?
You know, the same way we did back in 1990 when people were leaving the subways in droves because of the fear of the crime. We had 22 murders a year. At the rate we're going, it's going to have almost as many. That I think there's been 10 murders so far this year, which is five times what we had a year or so ago. That the idea is that you basically protect people with cops. And we've let the size of the police department go down by several thousand. And we're having trouble recruiting once again. That the city's making a great effort filling academy classes, but we're still down several thousand. So the subways, good news is the last month or two, crime numbers are down, but the fear numbers are not down. And the coronavirus issue is the compounding factor at the moment. But
so
it's going to take
cops. We're out of time. I hear the music already playing.
Not at all. Okay.
Thank you so much for coming on, and let's catch up real soon. And thank you, Lydia Serrani. Thank you, Ed Cox. And thank you for everything you've done for our city, Commissioner. And God bless you. God bless New York City. And God bless America.